Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Sherry Bruschia. She has three books here, Great Taste, No Gluten, Great Taste, No Gluten Manuals, and Great Taste, No Pain. Today we're going to talk about a very, very common problem that traditional medicine has made a mess of. It basically is digestive disorders. And we'll talk about how to sort these out. And you're going to have to usually do it for yourself unless you go to an integrative doctor, because they get lumped into something called irritable bowel syndrome. True irritable bowel syndrome is something mediated by the nervous system, which means when you're emotionally upset, you have diarrhea. And I have a family member who has this, and it basically is a neurological problem mediated through the parasympathetic-sympathetic nervous system. That's true irritable bowel syndrome. And it's not that common. Most people have dysbiosis or food allergies or food sensitivities, which we will discuss in detail. And Sherry was in the health insurance industry, and she read thousands of case studies of people who consulted doctors for diseases like this and that didn't get the right diagnosis. And then she herself had some health challenges she's going to tell you about. But basically, you can't rely on traditional medicine to even diagnose you correctly with this. And the treatment really is eating right, avoiding things that you're allergic to or sensitive to, and knowing that there are some treatments out there like NAIT and other allergy elimination techniques that can help get you straight. Sherry, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Dr. Kolb. I'm so glad to be here today.
So would you like to tell the listening audience a little bit about your story and how you came to discover this particular area of problems?
Absolutely. Thank you. And I know you alluded to a little bit of my past, and you're exactly right with everything you said. My previous career was in the health insurance industry, and that was my baptism in how sick we really are. All I saw were case studies, as you mentioned, people going to the doctor, getting medication after medication, and not getting any better. And I myself was a living case study because I was having increasing digestive difficulties. I've always been one to have a little bit of a, my mother called it a nervous stomach when I was a kid, but once I reached my teen years, and especially my 20s, it just, every day, it was, okay, am I going to have diarrhea or constipation today? And gas was a given. So
right.
I never really tied it to my diet. I tried to say, well, maybe broccoli bothers me, or I tried to find certain trigger foods or whatever. I could never establish any patterns. So I was fortunate enough to consult with a holistic practitioner who suggested that maybe I try to employ the principles of what's called food combining, that is separating proteins and starches in my meal, just to make the meal less taxing on the body. And, of course, we'll talk about that in a moment.
My
symptoms completely disappeared overnight. And then I thought, okay, there's definitely something to this. And it makes a lot of sense. And, you know, we're talking 30 years later, and I'm completely symptom and medication-free. So that's when I really...
Food combining is a very important concept.
It certainly is.
Yeah, you want to go into more detail about that?
Absolutely. But I just wanted to say, too, that I decided to completely change my career. I got my master's in holistic nutrition. And, you know, I obviously wrote the books that you mentioned earlier. And now I'm trying to help people alleviate their digestive difficulties and other health challenges through their diet.
And correct diagnosis is really important. Not everybody has gluten sensitivities. I mean,
exactly.
You know, a lot of people do. And we have a holistic chiropractor here named Dr. Greenberg who does a lot with food allergies. And he says that a lot of the gluten sensitivities are actually Roundup allergies. And if innate and take away the Roundup allergy, that then people can tolerate the gluten. So that's a very interesting little tidbit, you know.
Yes.
You
got to
get the right diagnosis.
Something. You do. You definitely do. And you mentioned IBS a moment ago, that so many people are lumped into the IBS bucket, and they don't truly have IBS. And I was one of them. And so I remember saying to my doctor, well, what do I do now? Well, take a pill every time you eat. No, I don't want to live this way. This doesn't make sense.
Yeah, no. The pharmaceutical industry would love that, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Three pills a day on 20% of the population. That's like dollar signs.
Absolutely.
And those IBS drugs, by the way, are very expensive.
Yes, they are. I mean, I'm going way back a number of years. I was prescribed Donatol, I believe. I don't even remember the cost, but yes, I know it's gone up over the years.
It really has. And
yes.
Some of them work. It's funny. You know, people come in and say, I got this pill and it really works, and I look it up and I'm going, you know. But all it is treating a symptom. It's not treating the cause.
Yes, and that's what I tell people. They say, well, you know, the acid reducer makes me feel better. I say, yes, but your digestion is still thwarted. The process is not being carried out the way it needs to be. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's worse. They have 500 times the risk of food allergies if you're in an H2 blocker.
That's right. Well, you're crippling one of your stomach. You're crippling one of your body's defenses against food poisoning and other pathogens on your food. And people don't realize that.
Yeah, I want to do a little education right here about food poisoning and GI viruses. We had a GI virus sweep through the office, really nasty. In fact, one of the nurses was sick for 3 days. Now, what I did, I got sick on Thursday, and, on Wednesday. I had a full thing of patients, which was great, with diarrhea and throwing up. Anyway, this is the treatment because this is the only thing that works. And my other surgeon did it, and my manager does it. The minute you get sick with either food poisoning or GI virus, you should take a concentrated silver. We use NutriSilver, about 5 drops. Don't take more than 5 drops because if you have yeast, you're going to be in the bed with all these die-off symptoms. You know, it'll kill off all the yeast, and you'll feel like someone really hit you with something.
Sure.
But anyway, take 5 drops in water, and then about 2 hours later, we use that because we have samples of it, but you could use other probiotics. We use VSL number 3, which is a really, really strong dose of probiotic that is actually a prescription. But you don't want to take it at the same time as the silver because the silver will kill the probiotic. So 2 or 3 hours later, there's a scientific study showing that viral GI illnesses are half the length if you take a probiotic.
Mm-hmm.
So that's good scientific evidence. And
Absolutely.
Then the silver knocks it out. Now, you may, with really nasty viruses or bacteria, you may have to repeat the silver in 2 to 3 hours. So you try to get the probiotic in there somewhere in the middle. But this knocked it out for me in 3 hours. And, of course, I had surgery the next 2 days. And my other surgeon was smart enough. He got it, like, in the middle of the night. He took silver. And he was still a little symptomatic during surgery, but he wasn't, leaving every half an hour like he could have been. He left once during the whole case. So, the idea here is that when you're in a surgery center, you can't be running out to the bathroom all the time.
That is so true.
In the room is supposed to stay in the room, especially anesthesia, that we've discovered how to treat it. But my manager has low acid, okay?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So she gets food poisoning right and left.
Oh, yeah.
Because people with low acid, and the other thing is if you're out, you talk about being alkaline, and one of my things is to take buffer pH if my pH is low.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I ate a hot dog, and hot dogs really aren't that good for you.
Right.
And I ate it when I took the buffer pH, and then I got a real bad case of food poisoning. So be careful. Do not eat any tainted food or potentially tainted food while you're taking the buffer pH, because I have a really strong stomach. I hardly ever get anything. This particular virus was very virulent, But a lot of times we have 50 employees here, so it'll go through the center and I won't get it because I have a really strong stomach acid.
Exactly.
But basically, I want the listeners to know about that because you can really save yourself like probably 2.5 days of hugging the toilet.
Exactly.
It really is
wow.
important.
I was
now,
not
don't
aware
overdo
of
the... silver though. Don't overdo
yes.
silver because silver has to be detoxed from the body.
Sure.
And it is, it can be a neurotoxin at high doses, so be careful.
Right.
You only want to do it when you really need it.
I was not aware of the silver. Now, of course, I have a probiotic product as well that I offer to my clients and on the Internet. Mm-hmm. But and I know the tremendous benefits of those, but I was not aware of the drops of silver, so I will keep that in mind and pass it along to people.
Yeah, it really is amazing. I mean, like I said, I was sick for 3 hours. My nurse, who brought it into the center probably from, you know, outside, was sick for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And all my other employees, you know, figured out about silver real quick because I told them, and they didn't stay sick nearly as long.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So anyway, acid not being in your stomach can have long-term health effects, not only food allergies, but also probably malabsorption. I mean,
oh,
I really think
yes.
Things don't break down properly, so you might end up getting a protein malabsorption. And what that means is you start degenerating. Your shoulder will get rotator cuff, your disc will degenerate, you'll get bulging disc, you know, who knows what else. But these are all early aging things. So don't do that.
And people don't tie it to their digestion. That is the
they
thing,
don't.
And that's the message I try to get out to people. And, you know, I tell them, I kind of use the analogy of building a house. I tell them the stomach's portion of your digestion, it's the initial breakdown. Consider that to be like the foundation of a house. If that isn't done right, the rest of the house isn't going to stand for very long, or doors are going to stick, or, you know, everything's going to be off level. You need to complete that initial stage properly. And if you're lacking acid, or if you're taking, you know, medications that suppress your acid or whatever, it's not going to be pretty down the road. Something's going to give, whether it's dysbiosis, leaky gut, like you said, malabsorption, something is going to give.
There are many of my patients are either cancer patients. Some of them get chemotherapy. Most of them don't, but some of them do. And then my silicone patients have defective silicone implants, and 100% of them have yeast. Now, let me tell you what yeast does to the cardiac valve, which is located between the esophagus and the stomach. Yeast causes that valve to malfunction. So if you start chemotherapy, if you get a T-cell immunity problem, or just get yeast because you're on too many antibiotics or too much sugar, you get reflux. And it's very common for people to get reflux about 4 days after starting an antibiotic if they're not on nystatin oral solution or some other treatment of yeast to prevent that cardiac valve from being affected. So I put people with on two things that have that reflux from yeast. I put them on nystatin oral solution, which will work for about 3 weeks, and I tell them to hold on to the last week of it and take it with their next round of antibiotic, you know, start out early. And then there's something, there's a supplement called Heartburn Free, which is an orange peel extract that actually tightens that cardiac valve. So that's specific for that. So I put them on that too. But reflux, if you get reflux after any of the things that increase yeast, know that treating the yeast is what you need to do. If you go to a regular doctor, they'll put you on an H2 blocker for the rest of your life.
Right.
And of course, without the treatment of the yeast, your symptom will stay there. Very dangerous, too, because that reflux can cause esophageal cancer.
Yes.
That acid affects the lower esophagus, and it can even cause asthma. Like if you're sleeping straight down. Whenever you have reflux, you should sleep at 30-degree angle or 45-degree angle, because if you're sleeping straight down, it can go up while you're sleeping and go down your lungs, and you start getting coughing and asthma and all these lung symptoms.
Right.
And a lot of doctors are smart enough to diagnose that, but all they do is put you on H2 blockers. They don't treat the real cause, which is the yeast. So know that, because your doctor isn't going to know it unless they're integrative. I actually learned that from a holistic, well, he's a regular oncologist, but he's got an open mind, and he figured out that all his chemo patients getting reflux had yeast, which was pretty smart.
Now, you were mentioning yeast. Now, I've been in contact with people that have had yeast problems myself, and a lot of them had to go on, like, yeast-free diets and, you know, totally eliminate all of the sources of yeast. And that's when I found out yeast is everywhere and in everything. It's kind of like gluten, you know. It's almost hard to stay away from it. But
I got something better because it is so hard to stay away from it. And that's Saccharomyces. Have you heard of that?
Yes.
Epicor is the brand name, but Saccharomyces is a yeast that crowds out the bad yeast, it's a good mm-hmm. yeast, you don't stay on it forever. You should muscle test every month, and because you're supposed to go off of it every 6 to 8 months for a month or two, because okay. you don't want too much Saccharomyces in your gut. But it's sure. very effective, not only for preventing yeast gut symptoms, but also for helping T-cell immunity go back up.
Mm-hmm. Very important.
And
yeah, that's another thing, too.
I muscle test for everything now, so that they don't get on something they don't need to be on.
Of course. You mentioned immunity, and that's so important. People don't realize that the vast majority of your immune system is housed in your intestinal tract.
That's right.
And so that's another reason why, you know, people, yes, it does make a difference to have sound digestion. This is where the majority of your immunity is mm-hmm. coming from. And
right.
people just have no idea.
Yeah. Now, the next area, let's go down the intestinal tract. The next area that you need to be concerned about is the gallbladder, because the gallbladder is going to put a lot of bile and pancreatic,
right.
The pancreas also, same system,
oh, absolutely.
Puts a lot of pancreatic enzymes. And if you're deficient in either bile, you end up with white stools or whitish or lighter stools.
Correct.
And then if you're, and your fat digestion's affected, and if you're deficient in pancreatic enzymes, your stools float and have
right.
a lot of smelly things to them.
Mm-hmm.
So just know if you have those symptoms that you need, well, if you have whitish stools, you really need a study to make sure you don't have stones in the system
exactly,
blocking
yes.
the thing, because you can get very sick very quick with that. And then
oh,
the
yeah.
pancreatic enzymes, you can actually take those. We have
oh,
them
yeah.
in a pill form.
Mm-hmm.
And then your stools won't float, and you won't have so much gas and, you know, things that aren't fat digestion problems.
Sure. I mean, helping the body accomplish what it's meant to accomplish, and that's what it's all about.
Right. And mm-hmm. then if you're, you know, if you, we always said in, we were saying, the anesthesiologist was telling the medical student yesterday about the four rules of surgery, general surgery. And, you know, there's these rules, but the last one is don't piss off the pancreas. Which is
so true.
Because, yeah, general surgeons like tend to be near the pancreas. You want to stay away from the pancreas because the pancreas
oh.
is not forgiving. So you don't want anything ever wrong with your pancreas. I mean,
oh, exactly.
it can cause horrible pain, horrible problems. You know, if you get a leak in the pancreas, those enzymes eat everything. So, you know,
yes,
you really, really have to be careful and not develop pancreatic problems. So don't drink a lot of alcohol. If you get a stone disease in the pancreas or in the gallbladder, get phosphoric acid, phosphoric acid, mm-hmm. and get those stones dissolved. You know, diagnose the problem correctly and treat it, because you can end up just an abdominal cripple with pancreatic issues.
Exactly. And, you know, the thing is, we are taunting our pancreases day and night, especially with the large numbers of refined carbs that are in our diet.
Yeah.
Our poor pancreases are cranking in overtime, trying to crank out insulin. And so I think that's got, you know, like a secondary effect. We're stressing the pancreas to begin with. I know I'm talking about insulin now, but still, if you've got a stressed pancreas, is it going to be as effective with the digestive secretions? I say probably not.
You want to hear something absolutely amazing, but you'll know what I'm talking about. Dr. Perlmutter did a study, and he found that 100% of his patients with adult onset diabetes had 100% cure rate with fecal transplant.
Oh, okay.
So think about that.
Uh-huh.
The gut flora, when someone gets a fecal transplant, they actually take baby poop
mm-hmm.
and put them to sleep, put it down their, you know, throat, okay, and release
mm-hmm.
it into their intestine. I mean,
exactly.
you know, you got to be asleep for that, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
and think about that. So these people are developing adult-onset diabetes because of a gut flora issue.
Yes.
I mean, that just really was amazing news to me. Because
mm-hmm.
we're taught in medicine that it's due to too much sugar,
right.
you know, like affecting the pancreas, which I'm sure it does, but it can be cured with a fecal transplant, just changing the flora back to what babies have,
right,
which is like real healthy, you know.
Sure.
So isn't that amazing?
That is so interesting. Yes.
It is. It shows the importance of the gut for diabetes.
Right. I mean, I've heard of the fecal transplants and for things, just gut-related issues, but I haven't heard of it for diabetes, so that's amazing.
Yeah, I can't. Perlmutter's an amazing guy. I interviewed him on this radio show about probably 15 years ago, And he was testifying for the women in the Dow Corning trials. He went on and on and on about how, what the implant companies did to these women. It was really funny when I interviewed him. You see, because they have a lot of neurotoxins that cause neurological disease, and he actually figured it out. He's real smart. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really amazing what he did with the diabetes thing. He's a neurologist. He's a holistic neurologist. He actually mm-hmm. taught at our board exam. He's a very, very smart guy. Mm-hmm. So that was very interesting. And it really does show how the gut is critical to not just the immune system, but, you know, the insulin resistance thing, too.
Yes.
But I will tell you this, people with candidiasis, every one of my silicone patients with candidiasis has high glucoses, you know, between 105 and 130.
Mm-hmm.
So they are getting insulin resistance.
Right. Oh, yes, yeah. Definitely.
So anyway, that's, you know, but it is all tied together. And every single one of my silicone patients has gut issues, dysbiosis, bad bacteria, sometimes bad mold and yeast, you know, parasites. Because when your gut isn't working, you tend to get parasites.
Oh, yes, you do.
You know,
it's a healthy
really
environment
do.
For them. Yeah.
Yeah, because the immune system isn't attacking them in the gut, so they can invade the liver and then on into the tissues. And
exactly.
One thing that people don't realize, and Hulda Clark realized this, I interviewed her on my radio show before she died, parasite infestations of organs is one of the most common causes of organ cancer,
sure.
Like most solid cancers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, breast has some hormonal issues, prostate has some hormonal issues, so they might be
right.
A little bit less. But I saw a couple of recurrent breast cancers be parasites and having to be treated with, you know, ivermectin, albendazole, or praziquantel. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, to prevent cancer, I'm going to say everybody in their 40s and 50s should have a complete parasite cleanse, natural
yes.
And if needed by drugs, even if there's no evidence in the gut, because a lot of parasites are in the tissues and not in the gut, and there's no gut symptoms at all.
And
the only way you're
going to
know
in.
Is the, I'm sorry?
They can burrow their way in and hide.
Yeah, I had gnathostomiasis. I was eating lox and bagels from a famous chain
mm-hmm.
that was contaminated, and I ended up with 110 natho that burrowed into my esophagus, landed in my left lung, was trying to cause cancer there. Fortunately, one of my friends had been inducted into the CIA because he was curing cancer with electromagnetics. He cured that.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to take ivermectin, praziquantel, and albendazole for a total of 9 months to rid myself of 110 natho. Natho don't multiply in the body because the humans don't, or we're not able to be a, they can't multiply in human bodies,
mm-hmm.
thank God, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but whatever
sure.
you eat, you have, I mean, they live
yeah.
in the human body, and they
right.
can go in the brain and cause seizures and death and go in the eyes and cause blindness. I had a patient the other day who had a first seizure in her 50s, and we muscle tested and found out it was natho.
Wow.
So, and you can get them from like lox and bagels or
mm-hmm.
smoked salmon, you know, things that you don't, you might even be at a dinner and they put a little smoked salmon in something and you don't even know it.
Yes.
You know, you don't, I mean, it could be chopped up, you know, you don't even know you're eating natho. Isn't that,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really true.
It is. It's
and then
very,
all
very
of a sudden,
scary.
I've got a great story about how I learned that I had it. I was, my meditation group, there was a physicist in my meditation group who doesn't know the names of these drugs. He heard from Michael the Archangel it was critical that I do ivermectin, critical. I mean, he said it's a real emergency. So I started on ivermectin. At that time, Monsters Inside Me was going to do mold and breast implants, but I had never seen Monsters Inside Me. So the producers called and said, you've got to watch an episode before we come out and film you. So I TiVo'd it, and guess which one I TiVo'd? Natho. And so after the ivermectin, it drives it from the inside. Now, you'll never know if you don't take ivermectin because
mm-hmm.
it'll be inside and it'll just cause cancer or seizures or whatever, you know, whatever
mm-hmm.
is going to cause. But I took the natho, it drives it toward the skin, and I had these great big bug bites on me. I thought they were bug bites. They're great big, like about 6 centimeters by 4 centimeters. What it is the natho is trying to come out the skin. And you can actually see it. It looks like a little hair coming out the skin, but your body's reacting to it. So you get these bug bites all over you. So I just thought they were bug bites. I thought somehow I'd gotten bit by bugs. But I'm looking at the monsters inside me, and I'm like, oh, my God, I've got NAFO. It's the only thing that, I mean, everybody with that has a NAFO, okay? I mean, nothing else presents like that. And
right.
So thank God they made me watch that episode. And then I realized I had to muscle test and do the antifungals until 110 bug bites had come out. And then the only good thing is I got out of jury duty because I showed the judge these bug bites and said there was a parasite coming out. Freaked her out to the point she said, well, you're excused from jury duty. That's the only
never
good
saw
thing
that
came out of
before.
That.
That was probably a new one on her.
It really was. But it
oh
was funny
gosh.
Because, you know, I just can't do jury duty because I have people flying in. And, you know, it's not really fair, but the judge doesn't realize that you've got four or five people with non-return tickets that, you know, you can't do jury duty. I mean, you know,
correct.
You have obligations. But, you know, there's something wrong with our legal system that doesn't allow us to, you know, to do that. But, you know, anyway, but I got out because of this disease I had.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. You know, you mentioned a moment ago, you brought up the hormonal cancers as well, and that's something that I wanted to just talk about for a second because, again, you know, this is where I think we can tie a lot of stuff into the gut. When our body is trying to rid itself of old, worn-out hormones, what does it do? It dumps them into the intestinal tract. So, again, if you have a lot of constipation, poor digestion and everything, you run the risk
of
reabsorbing. Yes. And
and you get cancer.
Exactly right.
That's exactly right, yeah.
Uh-huh.
So a healthy liver and a healthy gut is critical to not getting these hormone cancers.
Yes. Yes, it is.
It is. Absolutely.
Now, what do you, I mean, I tell people ask me about liver health and so forth. You know, and of course, there's milk thistle and so forth. But I tell people, you can go a long way just by getting up in the morning, having a nice big room temperature glass of water with some fresh lemon squeezed into it. I said, that's a nice little way to pamper your liver every morning. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Oh, I agree. I put everybody on milk thistle that muscle tests for it. There are some people who can't take milk thistle for a number of reasons, mostly people with IC, you know, interstitial cystitis, because that just doesn't work. But I have something else called Supertone by Dr. Overman that usually does work. So I put everybody on liver herbs because basically we're going to get anesthesia because they're going to get their breast implants out. We're going to have to treat with some antibiotics that usually process by the liver. And we're going to have to treat with antifungals, which are definitely processed by the liver. So
I've
got to clean all the livers out. And sometimes the liver functions are high, and I can't really treat them until I get them down.
Yes.
But, you know, but it's very, very important not to do any alcohol, not to do any Tylenol, and not to do any drugs that are processed by the liver if your liver is struggling. That's right. You can eliminate those three things. And if you've got to be on pain medicine, you know, the Oxy-IR and the Demerol and Dilaudids are processed by the kidney, not the liver.
Yes.
It's the Tylenol that is in these Norco, Lortab, Percocets that is so dangerous if you're on a chronic pain medicine. You need to get off of those. You really do.
Absolutely.
I mean, you don't want to be chronically on Tylenol.
Right. Right.
Nobody does.
I
don't see anybody who muscle tests to be chronically on Tylenol. It's actually way more toxic than almost anything else other than the NSAIDs, Aleve, aspirin, and Motrin on the stomach. I mean, if you have a stomach issue and take those, you can really mess your stomach up.
And I think the scary thing is a lot of people don't realize how much Tylenol is in a lot of different medications.
It's
not only
everything.
Pain relief, but cold medications.
Yeah.
So people could be getting a lot more than they think, and that's where, you know, they run into danger.
Exactly.
Well.
You could be on a prescription pain pill and then taken over the counter and really be getting an overdose of Tylenol.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the thing is, people think because it's over the counter that it's safe. And, of course,
we know
nothing could be farther from the truth.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
you can drink dandelion tea. I mean, you can do some things that protect the liver that aren't, you know, that are real easy to do.
Sure. And then we were talking about antibiotics a moment ago. And, the havoc that they wreak in the gut is, you know, quite extensive. And I even have done a lot of reading where people are now connecting antibiotic use with Crohn's disease. Because, again,
they're
the
connecting antibiotic use with breast cancer, too.
Uh-huh.
They really are.
Yes.
There's a study out showing that if you take more than X amount of antibiotics, your breast cancer rate goes way up. Well, I can tell you what Crohn's disease is. You interested? I know exactly what it is. It's paratuberculosis.
Okay.
It's paratuberculosis. They did a study on, they took, just randomly went into grocery stores and grabbed the pasteurized milk, and I think over 50% of it had paratuberculosis living in it.
Interesting.
The pasteurization doesn't kill the paratuberculosis. So
right.
My real intuitive Crohn's patients know they cannot do milk products unless they're boiled. You know, boiling kills everything.
Mm-hmm.
But they can't. They got to stay away from milk. And there's a bunch of studies out there showing Crohn's disease is cured with the treatment of the paratuberculosis. And I've treated 4 or 5 people and got them over it.
Fantastic.
You got a muscle test, though. You got a muscle test because you got to know. These people can't afford to go on antibiotics without knowing that it's going to work because they already have gut issues.
Right.
And then, of course, you need really good, the best, I mean, I'm going to say probably the best probiotic is that VSL number 3. It is actually formulated for Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis.
Okay.
So, and you can get a prescription.
Yes.
But, you know, but you should muscle test anyway because you might need a second probiotic, too. Because it only has one thing in it, I think, but it has real high doses of it.
Sure.
So, but that's how you treat Crohn's disease. Avoid milk because you'll reinfect yourself. And treat the paratuberculosis because that's what it is.
Interesting.
Yeah, traditional medicine doesn't really know the cause of anything. It's really funny. You want to know the cause of Alzheimer's? This is important. Alzheimer's has 2 causes.
And
only
they
2.
Are.
No, only 2. Prion disease from bad meat and cyanobacter from bad fish. Now, if you read Discovery Magazine or Discover Magazine or Discover, I can't remember which one, there's an article in it about Alzheimer's. There was an island where the people were eating bats, the natives were eating bats, and the bats were eating cyanobacter, and everybody on the island got Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
wow.
Fish. You don't know what's contaminated and what's not, and it concentrates in the brain. If you read that article, I can't remember right now, but the name of the toxin for cyanobacter is in that article. It concentrates in the brain, and I'm pretty sure that we can figure out how to detox that toxin. Now, for prion disease, I actually was exposed to prion disease, so I went to all these clairvoyants, and they told me I was going to get Alzheimer's, and then my cousin died of Alzheimer's in his 50s, and we all got exposed at the same time, so, you know, that's probably true. But what I did Dr. Overman's treatment. I did Prion X and Prion Heal, which are herbal remedies, along with the Harmonic Quad, and I'm clear now. I'm not going to get Alzheimer's disease. Yeah, so you can treat it. I mean, you shouldn't wait until you're in the hospital with, you know, neurological illness. You need to muscle test now to see if you need to be treated. But you also need to muscle test. You know, Europe won't eat our meat because they know it's contaminated. That's a little-known secret, and Oprah got into big trouble for exposing that. But anyway, she got sued by the meat industry. But basically, you need to do pendulum testing or muscle testing before you eat meat or fish in order to be safe. You know, it's cumulative with it. And we determined that this is clairvoyant information, but 75% of the U.S. population has been exposed to prions.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not 75% is going to get sick.
Yes.
But that's how prevalent it is in the meat population here.
Wow.
And I was vegetarian for 25 years, you know.
I was vegetarian for 20 years. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. But before I got exposed, before I became vegetarian with my cousin.
Oh.
It can take 30 or 40 years for it to develop. I mean, I was probably in my teens when I got exposed.
Okay.
So, you know,
interesting.
But anyway,
stuff.
People don't know this, and we've muscle tested. There's nothing else causing it, nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can get vascular disease in the brain and get something that looks like Alzheimer's, but really
forms of dementia.
Is from small vessel disease, which, you know, that's a whole other conversation of how to prevent small vessel disease. But, you know, that's not this toxin that's so dangerous.
Right.
So anyway, we need to work on how to detox that cyanobacter toxin.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm going to talk to my friends who are toxicologists about that.
That would be revolutionary.
Well, that's the cause of it, though. I mean, you have to know the cause to know how to prevent it and how to treat it.
Yes.
I mean, well, I'm telling you how to prevent it. You muscle, you do either muscle testing or pendulum testing before you eat meat or fish. And because I don't know how to tell you. I mean, I think it's beef mostly, but I don't know for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, any meat in the U.S. could be contaminated.
Right.
And it's called Jacob Creutzfeldt disease. And it's very hard to diagnose because it requires a brain biopsy. My cousin actually was in a coma at Johns Hopkins and got diagnosed before he died, which is pretty good. But he was at Hopkins, so, you know, they know what they're doing with that disease.
Indeed.
Oh, and then the really dangerous thing, do you know about this? As a surgeon, if you are a neurosurgeon that's operating on a brain that has Jacob Creutzfeldt disease, even sterilizing those instruments in the sterilizer won't kill the prion, and it can be transferred to other people who use the same set. And Emory had to put out a letter a couple of years ago saying to its patients that they had inadvertently operated on a Jacob Creutzfeldt patient without realizing it, and that they had to send warning letters out to all the people who were also operated with those instruments.
Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine?
I mean, what is that? I mean, I don't even understand how that could be.
I know.
Isn't that interesting?
That's very interesting.
And I don't know. I mean, maybe it's the toxin. I don't know if it's the prion. I mean, I don't know. I mean, we don't really know what prions are. Prions are something that cause proteins to fold differently.
Yeah.
You know, who knows what that is? I mean, but it evidently can be transferred. Now, you know, I don't know if it's a toxin or an organism, or I don't know what it is.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's one of those alien things from outer space that, you know, I mean, it behaves differently.
Wow.
You know, we don't know what it is. But anyway, it's very dangerous. It can be transferred with neurosurgical instruments. And again, you know, they didn't know that the patient had prion disease. You know, it's not easily diagnosed. So...
Mm-hmm.
There
and
you go. About in the blood supply, you know, when you get a blood transfusion, can it be transferred that way too? I would imagine it can. I don't know.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. But there's no screening test for it. And then because prions are, you know, prions can be in you for 30 years without causing Alzheimer's, you can give blood an awful lot of times. You know,
yes, like, indeed. Oh, gosh.
We're really going to scare everybody with this show.
I know.
Oh, gosh.
Well, you had asked me a little while ago. We started talking a little bit about food combining.
Would
you like me to elaborate a little bit so your listeners can kind of see what that's all about?
Yeah.
Food combining is just, I like to say, it's making your stomach's job easier and helping it to carry out that which it is meant to carry out. That being said, there are, you know, different kinds of foods that require different kinds of enzymes to be broken down. Our proteins require acid enzymes. Our starches require alkaline enzymes.
Right.
And any good chemistry student knows that when you combine an acid and an alkaline together in the same lab beaker, they can neutralize each other.
Right.
Well, lo and behold, a similar process can go on in the human stomach. And this has been studied extensively. I mean, even way back, I'm talking in the early 1800s, a lot of scientists and researchers were, you know, studying human digestion, making observations that once, you know, starch was introduced into a meal with a protein, the digestion seemed to be arrested. And when you think about it, it makes sense. If it occurs in a lab beaker, it can occur in your stomach as well.
Right.
And so what I advise people to do is to try to separate concentrated starches and proteins, you know, from occurring together in the same meal.
Right.
So they say, well, you know, well, what can I eat then if I can't eat a baked potato with my steak? Well, then eat some vegetables, eat a tossed salad. It's just making your stomach's job that much easier. And if your stomach, as we know, can carry out what it needs to carry out, then the rest of the digestive process will occur so much easier. And it really does make a huge difference.
It's real important to eat fruit separately, too, and usually
Absolutely.
Before other food. Because
you
it ferments.
Correct.
It ferments
right.
easily because it's got so much sugar. Mm-hmm. So that that's something that I really, for me, that's way more important because of the yeast overgrowth I naturally have. Mm-hmm. That's very important. The food combining is not so important because I don't get digestive problems if I eat a, you know, meat with a potato. I just
mm-hmm.
don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I might, you know, I might be better off if I separated them just because of absorption things, but
yes.
I don't get symptoms. So,
mm-hmm.
but if you have yeast problems in general, which is any immune deficiency, eating fruit separate from other foods is very important.
It certainly is. I mean, it heads out of the stomach within 20 minutes. So if you have
right.
a lot of food sitting there in the stomach, you are, yes, asking for major fermentation to go on.
Right. Right.
Yes, and that's what I tell people, and they're so shocked because, again, I mean, the meals that we have nowadays are a smorgasbord mm-hmm. of every kind of food known to man on a plate.
Right.
And then what
yeah.
do we do a lot of times? If we want a healthy dessert, we eat fruit. And then people
right.
say, I can't
that's
eat fruit.
Not
it doesn't
good.
Agree with
eat
me.
Eat it first.
That's
eat
right.
It first. Eat dessert first.
Fruit can be your friend.
Yeah.
Just eat it on
yeah.
an empty stomach.
And I also want to tell people that any time you go on an antibiotic, you really need to go on a probiotic.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
And you probably
yes.
need to continue it for a few days afterwards. And you need to do a probiotic not at the same time as the antibiotic because the antibiotic will kill the probiotic. A lot
That's
of people,
right.
you know, they just don't realize that. It's common sense, but they'll, you know, they'll take all their pills at once, including that probiotic, and it just isn't working. But
right.
C. diff, especially if you walk into a hospital, C. diff is extremely prevalent and extremely contagious.
It sure
and,
is.
You know, we've been lucky in the surgery center not to have C. diff. But basically in the hospital, C. diff can occur very easily when you're on an – you can get contaminated with it, and then when you go on an antibiotic, it can grow like crazy. So
mm-hmm.
And C. diff can kill you. I mean, again,
yes.
scaring people to death. But C. diff can kill you. I've seen
yes.
it kill people.
Mm-hmm.
And so all you have to do is take a probiotic with the antibiotic, but not at the same time,
right.
2 to 3 hours difference, and then
mm-hmm.
You're really protected a great deal. I can't say 100%, but probably up to 90% from getting C. diff.
Yes. I had an acquaintance get that at following a surgery, and yes, it was not pretty at all. But thankfully, he did recover.
Well, yeah. I mean, most people don't die from it, but you can die from it. I mean, you know, there's... Just think about it. You go in the hospital for an overnight stay or an overnight surgery, and you get put on antibiotics because everybody does, and then you get C. diff, and you spend 2 weeks in the ICU.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the kind of thing that happens. It really is.
Yes.
It's
yes,
real
very,
bad.
Very.
Even
but
people who get it at home and don't get admitted are very, very sick. You know, it makes them very sick.
Right.
So anyway, and then obviously you want to go on antifungals if you've got pre-existing yeast in your gut, Nystatin Oral Solution, Diflucan, Nizoral, or V-Fend,
mm-hmm.
Just because you don't want the systemic yeast to go crazy. Say you have yeast in your sinuses because
mm-hmm.
you have chronic sinusitis and have been on antibiotics without antifungals. Well, you go on regular antibiotics, that stuff will grow, and then you'll get a weird diagnosis of sinus problems, which really isn't bacteria, it's yeast.
Yes.
And then bladder, you get urinary tract infection, looks just like a UTI, but it's not bacterial, it's yeast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, and anywhere, and bladder and sinuses are two areas that yeast is common. The most common is gut. I mean, if you're going to have
sure.
yeast, you almost always have in your gut.
Exactly.
And then mold. You know, I've got people with mold. Guess what? My patients with mold who don't have gallbladders, the mold affects the ampulla or vata, which is the thing between the common bile duct and the duodenum,
mm-hmm.
and it makes it squeeze down. It won't let it relax, and they get dilated common bile duct on CAT scan, and they get infection. They get gram-negative
uh-huh.
up the common bile duct that is infected.
Oh,
isn't that interesting? They get liver
yes.
pain real bad. Yeah.
Oh,
and
sure.
I've had it again and again and again. And I send them to my friend who's a GI doctor who specializes in ampullar vata endoscopy surgery, and he'd never heard of it. He'd never heard of it. And then I sent him a bunch of patients, and then he says to the patients, he says, any patient Dr. Cobb sends me is really, really sick. I go, yep.
Now, Dr.
That's
Cobb,
right.
If we can, do you want to talk for a chat for a few minutes about just our increasing reliance on processed foods and I call them so-called foodstuffs. And I think that is obviously a large part of our sickly existence these days. We are not nourishing our bodies with food. It's called so-called food because you get it at a grocery store, but it's anything but. And
yeah, modified cornstarch is plastic.
Yeah.
Dr. Sandager told me that. It's not even food.
Oh, I know.
And it's in everything. It's in all processed foods. It's incredible.
It really is.
Most yogurt has it in it, too. You really have to read the small print.
Yes, you do. You do. So even if you think you're buying something healthy, you have to be very, very, you know, astute and read labels and know what you're looking at. Go home and research all the ingredients if you have to, you know. I tell people the closer you eat to the ground, you know, food in its natural states, organic, if at all possible. And, again, that's very, very tough because it's expensive. And it shouldn't be that way. The healthier food should not be more expensive, but that's our existence and that's our reality. But I tell people, you know, closer to the ground, organic as much as you can. If you have to buy some kind of processed food, at least try to strive for organic. But even then, it doesn't mean it's healthy, you know. And I think so
many.
And
the other thing too, if you have money problems, you got a great thing on your sheet that's in your books about things that are okay to buy.
Yeah.
Not organic, like avocados, oranges, lemons, you know, anything with a really big shell to it.
Yes.
But not grapes, berries, you know, it's kind of common sense. I mean, if you're not going to eat the outside of a potato, you could probably peel the potato and the inside's going to be better, you know, than if you eat the peel. If you eat the skin of the potato, it's better for it to be organic.
Yes. Yep, and that's exactly what I tell people. If you're going to be eating the whole food, then you strive to buy organic. If you're going to be peeling
it
or whatever.
Celery, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, exactly.
But Kroger's doing a better job now. They have a lot of organic, especially the ones, I noticed, especially the ones that need to be organic, they're having more and more organic in Kroger.
I think that's very refreshing, and I think a lot of the stores are catching on. Now, I'm on the East Coast, so in my area, Wegmans is the big store, and they have a beautiful organic section, and it's getting bigger. So, and I do CSA shares too. I don't know if you do as well, Dr. Cole, but you know, I get the 6-month CSA share, community supported agriculture, and every week you get your pick and whatever the crops they're picking that week, and it's the most delicious organic produce for a fraction of the price.
Right. That's
so I encourage
good idea.
People to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, the problem I have is that I eat mostly out and mostly at medical meetings and stuff like that. So, you know, it's just impossible to do organic. So
when you
can't do organic, what you have to do is detox. You have to get it out of you after it gets in. So, we're experts at that now, insecticides and pesticides and, you know, getting it out, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you can do that. I mean, it's a little more trouble, a little more expensive, but I just... You know, I don't cook for myself, so, you know, and the restaurants around here don't do organic, so it's harder.
Right.
Yeah,
it's definitely a little specialty restaurant that will do organic. I know I have a few of them in my area, but there's certainly not a bunch of them.
They're not common, no. I mean, I know they're in Atlanta. They're just not close to me, you know. But it's harder to do it, so we end up just specializing in detox. But, of course, Millennium Healthcare specializes in detox, so that's a good thing.
Yes.
So you've got cookbooks here. I want people to understand that. You've got your things are cookbooks.
Well,
so,
actually, it's recipes. Not even so much cookbooks. It's a plan, you know, obviously stressing the food combining. But I want people to understand that eating right and eating nutritious foods can be very tasty.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I do love to cook. And have really experimented with a lot of different things. And I think that's where a lot of these recommendations to eat healthy fall short because people say, oh, it doesn't taste good, it's rabbit food, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right,
I try
right.
to make it tasty for the average person.
And also, like this Great Taste No Gluten Manual, you really explain what you need to have a gluten-free kitchen, what you can substitute, the grain guide, you know. I mean, you explain the problem. I mean, a lot of doctors now, that especially holistic doctors, are saying, well, avoid gluten.
Good one.
Yeah, right. Good luck.
Yes.
This is the manual on how to do it, which
that's
I'm going to recommend to my patient because this really is helpful.
Oh, thank you.
And then the Great Taste No Pain is 100 mouth-watering, easy recipes that probably are helping with, you know, systemic inflammation and
and
the food combining problems and everything, you know, how to plan these menus.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, the number of, I just love it when people write in because I wrote Great Taste No Pain back in 2007. So it's been out for quite a while. And what you probably have is the second edition, which I just wrote last year. But the number of people that I have had write in and call and say, oh, my God, I can't believe how much better I feel. And it's everything from not only alleviating digestive disorders, but also sleeping better, fewer infections and colds, because lo and behold, we're talking the immune system.
Yep,
and people always say, I never dreamed that this was related to my diet. And I think that's where modern medicine falls short more than any other place.
Absolutely.
They just have no appreciation for the role of nutrition and overall health. I mean, my own brother's an MD. And, you know, I mean, I won't tell you what his diet is. It would just make you cringe. And I think, oh, my gosh, what are you doing?
Well, doctors don't live very long, statistically. They're not real smart in terms of a lot of these things.
When you're having a donut and a Diet Pepsi for breakfast at my house, I just walk downstairs, God.
You know, it's so funny. I was over at the Heart Hospital for a while, and every morning we had donuts in the changing room at the Heart Hospital. I thought that was really good. So the cardiac surgeons were eating
that's so funny.
Cardiac surgery. It is funny. But, you know, many of us don't eat breakfast. We drink coffee and grab something with sugar, you know.
Yes.
If we're going to be in surgery for the next 10 hours, you know, on no breakfast, you know. But that's just the way it is.
Well, you made me I had an exercise stress test a few years ago because my dad died of a massive heart attack when I was a kid. So, you know, I was working with a new doctor that said, I want to just look at you from all different angles here, get you an exercise stress test, even though I work out regularly and everything else.
It's a good idea, though.
So the cardiologist is in there with me, and I'm on the treadmill. And I'm just walking along, and he says, well, he's looking at the monitor and everything. I said, if you want my heart rate to go up, you got to jack up the speed there and the incline. And he couldn't believe it because he had to keep bumping it up.
Right.
And then finally it got my heart rate up. But I'm sitting here looking at him. He was very overweight. It's like, okay, I understand that you don't know what working out is.
He's on that donut diet. I'm telling you, we get donuts from everybody. And coffee, I mean, coffee, every doctor starts their morning with coffee, except maybe your brother with his Diet Coke, but, you know, same difference. Except the diet's worse for you. The aspartame, really, I think, my mom drank a liter of Diet Coke every day, and clairvoyantly I heard that had a lot to do with the stomach cancer she died of.
Oh, yes.
So, I don't know, aspartame may not be the best thing for just your, you know, digestion.
No, certainly not.
Yeah.
I tell people, you know, there have been too many complaints and reports for it to, you know, not be harmful. Just, you know, stay away from it. There are plenty of other options out there.
Yeah, stevia and we have something called Veggie Sweet. Stevia, by the way, can affect some people's pancreas. So you should muscle test before you completely go to stevia.
Right.
Some people don't know that. But there are other natural sweeteners. Agave is not totally without sugar, but it's a lot less. You probably can recommend a few sweeteners.
I know people have recommended, like, the sugar alcohols, like xylitol. What I tell people, I usually recommend stevia, the xylitol. agave, definitely. But, you know, I say overall, the more you can avoid sweeteners in general, the better.
Yeah, and you don't need things super sweet. Yeah,
that's right. And even I would rather see somebody just use a small amount of organic honey in their tea.
Or maple syrup. Maple
yes.
syrup is really good.
Yes, it also it sure is.
Does it.
I love it.
A crap load of sugar. I do the Master Cleanser fast, which I love, which is distilled water, a half a cup of lemon, half a cup of maple syrup, and cayenne pepper.
Cayenne pepper,
and
yes.
You do that for a week, man, you get cleaned out. It's amazing.
I've had some of the gals in my office do that, and yes, they swore by it.
Yeah, it's really good, especially for those of us who can't do water fast because we get hypoglycemic. The maple syrup is actually important. You know, it's a sugar source throughout. You drink it throughout the day, so you don't get too much sugar, but you get enough so you don't go hypoglycemic. Well, we're getting near the end of our hour. Would you like to give your contact information?
Absolutely. People can check out our website, which is www.holisticblends.com. And when you visit there, you'll see my smiling face on the website and can check out the books that we've talked about today, Great Taste No Pain and the Great Taste No Gluten Recipe Book and Manual.
Great.
And then
also
we have our Blue Rock Holistics line of supplements as well. So if people want to check that out.
Yeah. Yeah, I also want to mention, I'm going to mention you to my friend Eva Hare. She has a radio show very similar to mine.
Mm-hmm.
So you might hear from her as well.
Okay, terrific.
Because I think she is real interested in this topic. So I'll mention her name to her, and perhaps she'll give you a call.
Fantastic.
Okay?
I love to do it. Well, it's been a pleasure speaking with you today, Dr. Cole. It's so nice to talk to somebody that understands, you know, what the truth really is behind food and health and so forth. So it's been wonderful.
It's very important. Yeah. Well, these cookbooks are, like I said, you know, the doctor says or, you know, the therapist says avoid gluten or do food combining. You know, all of these concepts are not so easy to put into practice. Like you say, food combining, well, a lot of recipes, you put the two foods you're not supposed to combine in the recipe.
Of course.
These are very important cookbooks. So, anyway.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Well, this is Dr. Susan Kolb. We've been interviewing Sherry Breschia on her books, Great Taste No Gluten, Great Taste No Gluten Manual, and Great Taste No Pain. And if you've got any immune problem, digestive issue, if you want to avoid cancer, you know, any of those things, take a look at her stuff because she's got real good information out there. Next week, let's see, we're going to be interviewing, Dr. Jill Carnahan. She doesn't have a book, but she's an integrative holistic doctor expert on mold toxicity. We're going to be talking about that because I was on Monsters Inside Me twice with mold and breast implants, so I have a definite interest in what my fellow doctors do with mold toxicity. And then Donna Smith Moncrieve is going to be talking about physical mediumship. She has a scientific book on mediumship out called Medium 7. And then Peter Sterling is a musician, and he wrote a book called Hear the Angels Sing. That'll be on the 24th. And then Andrew Rostenberg, actually Eva told me to interview Andrew. He's an expert on MTHFR, or methylation detoxification defect that affects about 25% of the population and affects most of the people sick from silicone breast implants because they can't detoxify these damn chemicals coming out. Anyway, he's going to be on the 31st. That's Halloween. Thank you very much for joining us. This is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Join us next week.